Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, happy Monday, everybody, and thank you so much for tuning in to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill. Today, I'm excited to have with us Tracy Jones. Tracy is a career and workplace advisor and is the author of the career advice book, A Message to Millennials, What Your Parents Didn't Tell You and Your Employers Want You to Know, released in April 2017. Tracy is the president of Tremendous Leadership, a professional development firm that advises Fortune 500s, government agencies, and universities on issues of leadership, ethics, and employee engagement. Her clients include Liberty Mutual, the American Automobile Association, the Defense Logics Agency, United Way, the McCann School of Business, and many others. A former Air Force major and Gulf War veteran, Tracy C. Jones spent 10 years in the corporate boardrooms of the National Geospace Intelligence Agency, where she had top security clearance, Northrop Grumman, a global defense firm, and Applied Materials, a Fortune 500. She is a graduate of the New Mexico Military Institute, the Air Force Academy, and holds an MBA in global management. Thank you so much for joining us today, Tracy, and thank you so much for your service as well.
Thank you, Jennifer. It's a pleasure to be on the air with you.
Yes, it's so wonderful to have you on, especially to discuss such a great subject, which is how do you survive your non-ideal job, which I think we've all had one of those at some point or another in our careers.
We sure have. As a matter of fact, I probably have several PhDs in surviving my non-dream job.
I know.
I know a lot about it.
Yeah, I think we've all been there, done that, and it might be your current job, or maybe you've already survived it. But tell me, how did you go from having been in the Air Force and serving our country to becoming focused on leadership and, more importantly, happiness and success? How did that evolution come about?
Well, I really enjoy gaining as many new experiences in life as I can. My father always taught me that we are born with an empty key ring at our side. And the more experiences that we have in life, the more success we're going to have, because life, as you know, Jennifer, constantly changes every day. And even if I found my dream job, chances are a couple months from now, something would slightly shift and I would need to take corrective action, as we used to say in the military. So I really grew up with a healthy attitude toward embracing new things and a healthy attitude of taking risk and failure. I always heard that the best, quickest way to success is to cram 50 years of failure into 15. So I didn't try to fail, but I sure really tried to push myself out of my comfort zone, and so was always just really just had the opportunity to work in so many different industries with so many different people, and all along the way, and remember, in each one of those, I thought, well, this is my dream job. And then a couple years down the road, I'm like, well, wait a minute, maybe not. So it's the process of growth and personal development. I think the older you get, the more you get more comfortable in your own skin, you start to realize your values become entrenched and you become bolder and more courageous about following them. So that's kind of how I guess I just grew up, Jennifer.
You just became an adult. No more Peter Pan where we just get to jump from one job to another, right?
Well, some of that. And there was a time where life was a lot of fun and then it's time to get serious. But like I said, I think the more you grow as a follower, you then start to determine what kind of a leader you're going to be. And you learn what kind of a leader you function under best. And I think as you grow and mature in that, you gain wisdom and you start to be able to make some better career choices about really knowing what you want. I hear young people, and I said it when I was in my 20s too, oh yeah, I have all the answers. But the problem is you don't know all the questions that life is going to bring your way. So we only know what we know. And as long as we're open and teachable and adaptive when we get the wind knocked out of our sails, you're going to do just fine wherever you wind up.
I think that's the key word that you just honed in on, which is being adaptable. Whether you're starting off in the workplace or you're 40 or 30 years in, I think our ability to adapt to people, circumstances, and situations, both positive and negative, directly correlates to our success or failure in life.
Absolutely. I'm working on my doctorate in leadership, and our leadership and management class I just got back from my 6 days in cohort was on crucible crises that form you as a leader. And I can always tell a leader because I look at them and I can see the wisdom and the empathy in their eyes and know that they've been through it. When you hit these downturns, when you hit these betrayals, when you hit these surprises, what they do is they lay before you the ability to regenerate, recharge, redeem yourself, find something adaptive in that challenge, which is then going to transform you into something greater than what you were before. And I wish character building didn't hurt so much, but it just does. And it's worth it. It's tough. And finding that dream job and ascending the leadership ladder, it's tough and it's lonely. But I'm telling you, it's worth every step.
I agree. I think it's so important, and it doesn't matter where you're at in your career. Just last week, we were doing a show about how all people, whatever level you're at in your career, there's an opportunity and a desire for leaders right now in the world and in your professional organizations. And I think what differentiates a leader from a follower is the person who's willing to take the risks and to own up to their mistakes and be accountable.
Absolutely. Albert Ian Gray has a great little booklet, and it's called The Common Denominator of Success. And his main point is that the only difference between a success and a failure is that a success has made a habit out of doing the things that a failure doesn't want to do. That's it. It's not your IQ. It's not your gifting. It's not your last name, although those things can sure make it easier. But it's your ability to really say, you know, it's tough for success to get up every day and deal with the mundane and the drudgery and the haters. I think some people sometimes think that, oh, successful people, they just have this magical light that they just float through with fairies and unicorns. And I'm like, guys, we still have to work with people just like you. But it's that we seek to find, psychologists call it extroversion. It's an adaptive capacity whereby you can take a negative event and turn it into something positive. And it can be learned and it can be developed. Some of us, like my father, who was a big motivator, it comes quite naturally too. So some of us have a more half glass full outlook. But even if you're one of those that has a glass half empty, you still can cultivate those talents. And I think the root of it lies in an attitude of gratitude. And if you even look at the difficult things as a path to growth, boy, you are well on your way to an incredible life that's going to not only develop you, but really serve as a testament to the other people around you, because you're going to be able to model this kind of behavior that a lot of other people really need to see. You're going to be able to absorb chaos and give others hope, which is the defining role in any job, non-dream job or dream job.
Well, that's a great point. And although I do agree with you 100%, I set my own gratitude list every morning, I'm going to play devil's advocate with you for a moment and pretend that I'm a job seeker out there today. And my boss stormed into my office and yelled at me and said, Jennifer, you totally screwed up this project. Our client is pissed. We could lose the client over this. What do you have to say for yourself? How could somebody bring gratitude, or how could somebody deal with that even if it's not their ideal situation?
Well, I have dealt with that, and part of that is going to be self-awareness. Now, I worked, as you said, in the military, where if you did screw something up, people could die, okay? So when I got yelled at, it's usually because there was something really critical that got missed. That being said, I am never a fan of yelling in the workplace. But if you're getting to the segment of, is your boss a bully, then we kind of venture into that realm. And I have left several bosses. I'm not going to say I left jobs, because I don't think people leave jobs. I think they leave bad bosses. And I would say if your boss comes in and reams you or lights you up one downside and the other, if you really look at this and say, you know what, there's nothing about what he said to me where I am responsible for, and this guy or gal or somebody you don't trust, or they're just hostile, it probably is time that you need to start sharpen up your resume and start looking for something else. Because as much as you want to sit there and have a positive attitude, there are toxic environments. I have left several of them. So I'm so glad you brought that up for our listeners, because just because you got it all together, you also want to find a leader and an environment and a culture that really encourages that. And that I hope everybody always tries for and hopes for.
Yeah, and I think it's a good point. And a couple of things that have been addressed recently in shows over the last year, and it just came up in a conversation over lunch, is there was one notoriously challenging attorney who nobody could work with at one of our clients for many years. And luckily, after chatting with her and her team, we were able to find her somebody. But this attorney had a habit of sending 2 a.m. emails, lacing into the employee and CCing HR, the executive director, everybody. So you could imagine it created poor morale. And when she was about to lose her most recent assistant, the attorney found out that she was going to lose her right-hand person. And she said, I'll do whatever I can to keep you. What am I doing wrong? I mean, she would, on the flip side, do very nice things for her employees, like good bonuses, flowers, champagne on birthdays, etc. And the person was very straight with her and called her on being a bully. And she said, you know what? This is not acceptable. You going on a rampage at 2 a.m. and CCing X, Y, and Z person is not something that creates a healthy work environment. And apparently, as soon as she had that conversation, the attorney didn't want to lose her. And she didn't realize that it was a potential issue or that that was unacceptable. And it actually became a better work environment, which was surprising.
I can't believe, I am so glad you said that, because I have gotten asked to do many, many talks on how to deal with a bully boss. And the first thing I say is, you have to sit down with them and let them know that this is unacceptable. And they're like, what? And I go, yeah, because otherwise you're going to be talking to them across the table with a lawyer or HR. Try and solve it at the bottom level. I always assume that the other person is unaware. Now, sometimes they are and sometimes there aren't. But you really should give them the chance. I have had, when I was a new officer, I came in there and tried to act all officer-y, and I was trying really hard, but I was really irritating the heck out of everybody. And one of my enlisted guys finally said to me, hey, LT, settle down. We all know you know what's going on, and you, but please, you know how you're, and I was so thankful that they came to me and didn't go to my commanding officer. So now, when you do that to somebody, one of two things is going to happen. One, like you said, they're going to go, thank you, and I am going to make a change. Or number two, they're going to say, now you're on my radar and I'm out to get you. In that case, that then you're really, really sure this is a bully boss. You need to use the chain. And if it doesn't stop, you definitely need to leave that organization.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And so I think that the biggest complaints I hear about, actually, there are a couple of them, aside from the bullying boss or the person who yells and screams. Another common complaint I get from people in a non-dream job environment that they're trying to get through or survive is the micromanager. What would you suggest to somebody who has their boss or officer, whoever it might be, just sitting over, looking over their shoulder, nitpicking their every move? How do you handle that in a grateful way?
Well, that's excellent. There are a couple tests online. I talk about this in the book. Robert Kelly wrote a book called The Power of Followership, and there's a free online test. It's in the book too, the link to it, that you can take a test. It's a free PDF. It takes about 5 minutes, and it identifies what kind of a follower you are. There's five different categories of follower, all the way from passive, which means tell me what to do and micromanage me, because unless you're watching me, I'm not going to get it done. Okay. And then on the other side of the spectrum is what's called an exemplary follower. And this is somebody that wants to co-lead. They're hard chargers. They're critical thinkers. They're not going to tolerate nonsense, and they want to keep pushing up the organizational, you know, level of accountability and performance. It sounds like what this individual is somebody that is independent, autonomous, and exemplary, and therefore the worst thing that their leader or their boss can do is micromanage them. Because I have been in that, where if you have a boss that has a tendency to micromanage, they need to go be put over people that need to be micromanaged. But if a boss, and sometimes it's as easy as sitting down with the boss and saying, hey, let's take this test, you know what I'm saying?
Wow.
Because once the boss, if the boss thinks they have that, if the boss only, see, they only know what they are, and so therefore they think that they have to manage everybody, and what they need to really do is look at each individual separately and say, boy, this person I got to really watch, this person sometimes, and this person, man, they got it, and if I don't get off their back, I'm going to demotivate them, and I'm probably going to lose them. So I would say to them, take a look at this test, And I wish, Jennifer, I would have taken this test 25 years ago because I thought I was like the problem child. And here it was. I just needed to be working for people that were going to let me do my thing. Mm. And they weren't wrong, and I wasn't right, and I wasn't right, and they weren't wrong. It was just, it was a bad, we were unequally yoked in a professional sense. So I really think, you know, you need to let them know. The next thing is, Jennifer, the individual really needs to look at themselves and say, hey, am I doing everything I can to my boss to let them know what's going on? Some bosses like to be copied on everything. Your boss isn't a mind reader. And I have had a lot of people, I will really let people do whatever they want. But as the boss, you still have to keep me in the loop as to what's getting done. And I have sometimes people get exasperated and say, yes, I took care of it. And I just pat them on the back and say, but if you don't tell me that, how do I know?
Exactly.
So it's a two-way street. But you're going to know pretty quick if you sit down with your boss and say, hey, do you not trust me? Is there something I'm not doing? How can I make you feel more at ease so I can like focus on getting stuff done? Because this isn't I'm not sure what's going on here, but I got your back and I want to perform for you. What can we do to up that? And they're either going to go, whoa, I'm sorry, I didn't know, or they're going to go, too bad, I'm threatened by you, I'm scared you're going to eclipse me, and I'm going to do everything I can to make your life miserable. You know, that's the whole thing. Is your boss really doing it because they don't know any better, or are they trying to do it to intimidate you? And you never know until you have those conversations.
Yeah, I think everything exists in a conversation. And so I think you've given some good advice if we're in kind of one of those typical, your boss is bullying you or harassing you, or you have somebody who's micromanaging you. But then we get into the other side of the equation, which is your colleagues. What if you have a colleague that just ruffles your feathers and drives you mad? How can you deal with that gratefully?
Oh, man, I've had a lot of them. Now, you mean a colleague? Is it somebody? Well, first of all, I'd say, is it somebody you have to interact with?
Yes.
Okay. So now my thing is, and I tell people this, George MacDonald has a great quote, and he says, it's better to be trusted than to be loved. Mm. I don't have to like you, but I have to be able, when I go to you, know that you're going to do what I say and you're not going to be an idiot about it or try and play stump the dummy or these games. So, again, I mean, personalities, we're all coded certain ways. I'm more task-focused, so when I have to work with somebody that's highly relational and all they do is talk, that drives me crazy. I'm sure I drive them crazy when I'm, like, saying, can you get to the point? You know what I'm saying? But I would say just try and talk. Now, here's the other thing. It's why are they ruffling your feathers? Is it because they're lazy? Is it because they're toxic and gossipy? Is it because they don't do what they are supposed to do? Now, that affects your productivity. And if it's something that affects your productivity, again, I would go to them first and say, listen, because remember, we don't have to like each other, but we do have to get the job done. But if it's just a personality quirk, and boy, there's plenty of them, I would just try and tune them out. Remember, not everybody can be as perfect as we are. And just try and maybe limit your interaction with them, if at all possible.
Okay, got it. So it sounds like it all comes down in all of these situations to communication and accountability, where you're communicating with the other person what's missing or what would make a difference, combined with self-awareness, and then being accountable for the things you can be accountable for when it comes to interacting with these people.
Absolutely. And the other thing is, Jennifer, you know, we always hear, okay, you can either fight or flight. I can either go with this person or I can just ignore him. The other thing is, we can kind of adapt. The more I learn about myself, the more I realize, hey, I'm this way, but there's 15 other different ways people are looking at this. And so I've become much more open in considering maybe somebody doesn't want to get right to the point like me, but could I adapt a little bit more on my relational side and try and, like, knowing that this is what they like, try and just be a good coworker and move a little bit, kind of thing. So, like I said, if that's just it, I mean, I've become much smarter in understanding, you know, how other people think and how I can better get on their good side, because then when we do that, then we can become much more collaborative together.
Yeah, I think that's so important, is that if you approach somebody, whether it's a colleague, whether it's a superior or somebody you're overseeing from an adversarial standpoint, I think that the moment you take that stance or perspective, you're automatically setting yourself up for a negative situation. But if you see the person as a partner or give yourself an opportunity to look for the good in them or find something that you could relate to them about, then it opens up a whole new span and expansive communication that wasn't available before when you were coming from a different perspective.
Well, and they say that. They say, well, the thing that you dislike most in others is in you. And I'm like,
not true.
I'm still not sure, but I got to give the wise sages the benefit of the doubt and let them know. But you're right. I have always believed that 99% of our problems and our misunderstanding and our spirit of enmity and our hostility and our frustration, 99% of it could be alleviated, if not circumvented or healed altogether, if we just went to one another at the first opportunity and said, hey, did you mean to do that? Because that was kind of uncool. Or, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to come across like this. I really think we've lost that art, especially with technology. And trust me, I love technology. But we're used to lobbing stuff across that virtual screen with no accountability or sense of self-awareness of what we're doing to other people. And it's like, ooh, that's destroying the thread of humanity. Until we're all robots, we're still going to need to deal with each other. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and be human beings. I had a client who had approached me to do work with her a couple months ago. And she was extremely rude and angry and not pleasant at all to deal with when we gave somebody an offer through her. And so lo and behold, 2 months later, she calls me back. They still hadn't filled the position. Surprise. And she said to me, Jennifer, I'd like to, you know, retain you and work with you again. And I had to be very direct with her. I said, listen, I appreciate that. I'm flattered that you want to work with us. And the people I work with, it's a collaborative thing. It's symbiotic. There's mutual respect. And I didn't have that experience with you last time. That said, I don't think I'm going to be the best resource for you if we can't create that, co-create that going forward. And Tracy, I fell off my chair. This person who had been extremely adversarial in the past apologized. She took full accountability, apologized, and said, wow, I'm so sorry. I had no idea it occurred for you that way. And we had the most beautiful conversation around it.
Oh, my gosh.
Which was like a miracle.
That's it. And that is, oh, my gosh, Jennifer, that is incredible. And you know what? We don't know what's going through that person's head.
Exactly.
We don't know if they just got news that their kid, got kicked out of school. We don't know if their dog died the day before. We don't know. We just, and when we assume, and when we take offense, and not just be honest with people, but the minute somebody says they're sorry that like that, that is a huge character gold star,
right?
Because we all make mistakes, and even you and I, I'm sure there are people that would look at us and say, wow, I had a different experience with her. But if you can come back and say you're sorry, typically that is a turning point that then takes that relationship to a whole new level, as you have said in your story. Thank you so much for telling me that. That's very encouraging.
Yeah, and I think it's great, because I just want everybody out there who's listening to know I practice what I preach, whether I'm interviewing you today, which is amazing because I learn something new every time I interview somebody. And I always ask myself in my day-to-day life, when I'm confronted with a person or circumstance or situation, how can I apply what I've learned? And I think if we get curious and ask ourselves those questions before we engage with other people, it just opens up more freedom for different ways to express ourselves.
Mm, beautiful. And it's, I heard somebody say to me the other day, hurt people hurt people.
Mm.
And we need to be the ones that are healthy, and we need to take the high road. And you can never respond to disrespect with disrespect. That only makes things worse.
Yeah.
And somebody will say, well, they deserve... No. Be the first one to extend that like you did, and just be honest. And then you know what? If they want to continue down that path, be my guest. I've had that happen plenty of times too. But that way you've at least been professional and a kind, decent human being. And that goes a long way.
It really does. And I know that we've been talking a lot about external circumstances, other people, other circumstances, adversaries perhaps in the workplace. What if it's just you? What if you're just sitting there at your job and you're in a rut? How do you handle it if you're the problem at your job?
Well, my father used to tell me, Tracy, if you want a better job, do a better job, and you'll have a better job. So I would say if your intrinsic motivation is low, I would do everything I could. I'd get online. I'd take some webinars. I'd take some personality profiling tests. I would really drill down and get to the root source of why are you unhappy, or why are you not feeling the motivational mojo? Because until you really pinpoint what the root cause is of the rut, and it may not be your job, it may be a coworker, or it may be something going on in your personal life. It may be, hey, I just found out that I was near the point of exhaustion because my adrenal gland was shot. It could be a physical thing going on. So really make sure and do some homework and find out, hey, what's going on? And then take time to they call it sabbathing. Take time to unplug and recharge. Get rid of the toxic influences in your life. Maybe it's watching nasty stuff on TV. Maybe it's toxic friendships that pull you down. I mean, you really got to, you know, our bodies are a temple, and we really got to preserve the goodness inside of them. So I would just really, really do a lot of soul searching. And, you know, the other thing is, Jennifer, when you feel like you're in a rut, just think about other people in other parts of the world and start focusing on what you do have instead of what you don't have. And I think that I don't mean to sound, cliche, but so much of it is, I remember reading Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning about how he survived the Holocaust as a Jewish psychotherapist, and how he found meaning to go on in the most hellish of places. Mm. And it was all about choosing the proper attitude and the proper outlook on life, and that wherever you are, you can still be of service to somebody. So I would say in your job, if you're not feeling it, look for ways. Maybe you can volunteer for other teams. Maybe you can take on a mentee or a protege. Maybe you can get involved in volunteering. A lot of times when we are in a rut, it's because we're too focused on ourselves and we're less focused on helping others. So that would be my recommendation.
I think you and I have studied with the same teachers, because that's what a lot of my teachers have taught me as well, is that when we become so me-centric and literally in survival mode of, I can't survive this, or depressed. I don't know about you, I've gone through that myself. And I wish somebody would have told me when I was going through that at 13, 16, 20, you know, my early 20s, that get outside of yourself and give something. Give time if you can give time, give money if you can give money, even give away an extra pair of clothes or something that maybe you don't wear anymore. And the minute you do that, it just shifts the focus out of survival and creates the opportunity for abundance and flow and things to come to you in unexpected ways.
Absolutely. But Jennifer, you brought up a great point. And for the listeners, you are going to go through these highs and lows many, many times throughout your life. I'm so glad you said that. I have a lot of people come up to seminars after me and say, man, I was in it and I didn't know I thought I was the only one. And I'm like, no, it's part of our physical makeup. It's part of our emotional or spiritual makeup. We go through these highs and lows. And so if it happens, just be aware that your self is telling you something, and don't think you're not the only one. Reach out, draw on your tribe, on your inner circle, and share with people what's going on, and help that, let them help you.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing, that as human beings, we're afraid to be vulnerable and expressed. It's funny, actually, tonight in LA, there's something we started with a group of my girlfriends called the Gratitude Girls Group. And I encourage you, start it in other cities too, because, and for men as well, but we just started it as a group of women, because sometimes women have a hard time creating honest, authentic friendships and having the opportunity to be vulnerable with one another. And so what we do is we just share in a safe space. If somebody's going through financial struggles, marriage struggles, business obstacles or successes, I think having a group of people that are trustworthy, men or women, doesn't make a difference, to share your feelings with and to allow other people to contribute to you is the greatest gift. We don't even realize it, but it's a huge gift to be able to allow others to contribute to you.
It is. We need each other. We need to be attached, both from an evolutionary and a spiritual standpoint. Once we get alone one-on-one, that's when we start to die on the vine. And we even the strongest, and it's tough for us as women because we're so strong, we're used to doing it all. Allow yourself the power of others to come into your life.
Yeah, I think it's you've given our listeners so many wonderful tidbits. I mean, I feel like you and I could talk for hours. We'll definitely have to find another time to have you join us on the show again. So, Tracy, please tell our listeners where can they pick up your book. Tell our listeners where they can find out more information about you and about the services that you offer.
Okay. Thanks, Jennifer. I would be delighted to connect with the listeners and carry on the conversation. They can connect with me on our website. It's www.tremendousleadership.com. All my books are on there, and there's a Tremendous Tracy, a Contact Tracy form. My email, I answer it directly. You can call me. I answer the phone. You need to have any thoughts. I'd love to hear any thoughts you had as a result of this, and I'd love to connect with you. But it's, like I said, tremendousleadership.com.
Awesome. It's been such a pleasure to have you on the show today and to get to share with our listeners how do we survive that non-dream job, which we all will have had. And it's again, the great thing is it's all about perspective. You can always bring your own perspective and with a great attitude and the ability to share and make a difference, make an awful job great. So thank you so much for joining us today. And I invite all of our listeners to tune in next week. We have Lale joining us, and she is from a company called Bella Pimo. And we're going to be talking about how can you authentically share in an interview and land your dream job. So we're going to talk about not giving those cagey answers or those canned answers where it comes across as completely inauthentic, but how can you be authentically self-expressed in your next interview. So tune in next Monday at 4 p.m. for our show with Lale. And additionally, if you missed any portion of this show or any of our prior shows, you can always find it available for download immediately following the show on LA Talk Radio's website under the archive section or on iTunes later in the week under Get Yourself the Job on iTunes. We also have a Facebook page on iTunes where you're welcome to leave us comments, follow us, and we share articles as well on that Facebook page. So thank you so much for tuning in this week, and have a wonderful rest of your week, Tracy, and everybody out there.
Thank you, Jennifer.
All right, it was a pleasure.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.